Talk Radio, Mike here, Money Your Matters. We certainly are glad that you are with us again today, a very fine Tuesday. And it is the Workers' Memorial Day, a Memorial Day set aside once a year by the President of the United States, as declared by him, to honor the workers that died on the job for one reason or another. And so we'll talk about a little of that today, how to prepare yourself, not for death, but prepare yourself for a disability or something, a work-related injury, and that's how that's going to impact on your pocketbook. You never count on that happening, but sometimes it does happen, and boy, it really will dig into your pocketbook real fast. So we'll talk about that and a whole bunch of stuff today. In the background, you're hearing Volbeat, which is a Danish heavy metal rockabilly band that started up maybe about 10 years ago and is making its way through the U.S. and does one heck of a job. We have a very big surprise for you today, returning from his small sabbatical. Mr. Todd Mark, welcome back to the air, my friend.
Hey, what a great thing. It's so good to be here. And I was just thinking when you said Workers' Memorial Day, I said, that's great because I didn't die on the job. My job died on me. But I have emerged from the depths of unemployment to find a new career, which is right in line with my old career of financial education and empowerment.
And you are with now?
So I am now. I'm now with the fifth largest credit counseling organization in the country. Another nonprofit. It's called Navicor Solutions. They're based out of Freeholt and Manalapan, New Jersey, although they have an office here in Dallas, in Texas, but they're in San Diego, Las Vegas, Baltimore, Detroit, Raleigh, Champaign, in other cities, but they're a 50-state, they're a national nonprofit, one of the great peers. So, and working with my former organization, CCCS of Dallas, we were both two of the six national agencies doing the HOPE Hotline, the federal foreclosure line. Which, so I got to really know the leadership of this nonprofit. And when I told them that I was no longer with my former organization, they created a leadership team position for me.
Really? Really?
So this was not, hey, let's see if we've got anything. They said, we want you, they really came after me hard. They said, we want you to be with Navicor. And so I'm thrilled. I'm going to be doing much the same roles. I'm going to be I'm going to be focused on education and bringing in contributed dollars to the nonprofit, which is not a skill set that they've been great at. So partnerships. And I said, great, can I continue to do things like Your Money, Your Matters, which is all with all of our great credit union partners across Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas. They said, we would love that. And I said,
We are very, very pleased that you have joined us.
Well, I've missed being here. Cornerstone Credit Union League and Foundation, you guys have been my family. And here it is. This is our sixth year doing the show. We celebrated our five-year anniversary in January. And then I thought, gosh, this is like one of those people's like, you have a breakup for 2 months. So, will your six-year anniversary be in January and mine will be in March or April? I don't know how this works, but no, I'm so thrilled, to have a little stability there in my life, and but B, to be back doing what I love. I was really concerned that I was going to find myself in a PR job, a marketing job, or something that took me away from the field of financial education and empowerment. And this is the exact reason why we do the show every week. And that was a difficult choice for me, of saying, yeah, I've got other skills that could go into field. And by the way, this is not just me. This is truly good money advice as we talk about people going through job transitions. You think about what your transferable job skills are and how they would apply to other industries. There are a lot of things I could do. There are a lot of opportunities. But I'm not done being a consumer advocate and doing financial education. It's truly one of my core missions in life. So I was really thrilled to find a position specifically very similar to what I've done the last 15 years for two different CCCSs. So now I'm with my third CCCS, a member of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, a HUD National Intermediary, and it's like I never left. I just changed addresses.
This is good. I'm very, very happy for you, Mike. And, you know, you're probably happier than I am, but I'm happy for you.
Thank you
have this position. And
so
certainly that you've rejoined us on the air here. You know, we can take this thing bigger and better all the time, always looking for ways to expand it. One of the ways to do that, of course, is to get you all to call in
And here's the number, 646-929-1020. That's 646-929-1020. And you can give us a call. And if you would like to talk on the air, you just press the number 1 key. That'll raise your digital paw. I'm monitoring the board. And as you raise your hand, I will bring you in, and you may comment on anything that you would like, add to the conversation. If you, however, don't want to participate on, because you just feel, wow, I don't have a radio voice. You know, that's okay. What you can do is go to our chat room. I'm monitoring that as well, and you can put your questions or concerns in there, and we'll try to address them as best we can.
So what's the deal? I'm gone for 2 months, and you've redecorated the place. Wow, I feel like the old roommate is gone, and there have been a few changes in your absence.
I'll take over that bunk space.
Well, yeah. Where are my clothes, Rick? Now, so to give a little visual for all of our listeners, we've got some posters now in the back. They say Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Central, Your Money, Your Matters, Blog Talk Radio. We've got a Blog Talk Radio logo. We've got a couple listen and talk posters. And then we've got something that doesn't – wait, what does this say? Out of these four, one of these do not match. Can you identify it? This is WYSM Music Guide.
And with a
Peter McNeil spreads the rock and roll and the radar love weekends on WISM. So now I must say that Peter McNeil looks like a very funky, kind of like a Saturday Night Live, Saturday Night Fever version of you. So who is Peter McNeil?
Peter McNeil was my pseudo air name.
Oh, the truth comes out.
It's kind of like Robert Smith's real name was Wolfman, or air name was Wolfman Jack.
There you go.
You know, a lot of people had air names and real names. And the producers always said, well, here's the reason why. We don't want everybody calling you at home, and since you're listed in the phone book, that way you don't get all these calls morning, noon, and night. What it really was is that, and I realized this after my 2-week stint at WCFL, which, that was humor in and of itself, was that there was a call from my old station manager to the new station manager saying, you know, you can't use the name Peter McNeil on WCFL because we own it. and we published it, so therefore we could trademark it as our name. And I found that there was a small little paragraph in the clause of the contract that basically said, unless otherwise noted here, the station owned the name, not the individual. So if the person went off, they had to pay the royalties back to the station in order for me to use the name. Of course, then CFL changed their format to MOR, and we all left.
Oh, well, there you go. So
it was heavy-duty rock and roll. It was super CFL.
Yeah.
But then it went to boring CFL.
So this would be funny. If you want to call Your Money, Your Matters, press 1 to speak to Rick Grady and Todd Marks. And press 2 for Peter McNeil. Stay in the tunes. So
it was a great life. I enjoy being on the radio. Always have been enjoying being on the radio because there's a lot more that you can do on the radio. You can talk from the moon on the radio, and no one knows any better. I mean, I've talked from all kinds of strange places when I was on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the bottom of the ocean, naked in the studio one night, had people pounding on the window that we had covered up. It was all kinds of weird stuff that we did. So.
Wow.
And I even got a letter from the FCC saying, well, you can't say that you're naked on the radio. I'm going, okay.
I'm virtually naked. I'm not really naked.
I just painted the picture for them. That's all I did.
And again, we are fully clothed here on Your Money, Your Matters.
And we are talking about money and matters.
Yes, we are. So let me ask you, Rick, what has happened money-wise in the last 2 months? Because I've got to tell you, it's been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When your life is a little bit disheveled, and of course my biggest money matter became finding a new source of money. And I find myself slightly out of the loop with some of the larger stories of the world. So yesterday somebody said, and I don't know if this just happened last week, that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has just ruled that nonprofits can provide credit scores, such as like nonprofit counseling agencies can provide credit scores directly to consumers And the real ones, not the FICO scores, but like FICO scores, and which I think is fantastic because if you ask me what should have happened when they did the Credit Card Act 5 years ago, they should have just made credit scores free to consumers just as they've made credit reports free to consumers as well. So why do you have a carve-out of, well, you can see all the information, but a number is something that you'll have to pay for. They all tie to your access and your cost of borrowing. So to me, it should have always been something free. So I just heard that. I don't have the details of it. It's something you know, or it's going to be a positive for credit unions.
Yeah, I think it'll be a positive for credit unions. I think it'll be a positive for a lot of organizations that deal in the area of credit counseling. You know, they basically had to buy this type of stuff, and there was a value to that. The people that have those scores and everything collected the data, then they put together the scores, and then they felt, well, there was a tremendous amount of value to that, so therefore we will sell that data, and we will not give that data to anybody. Other than if a financial institution has a contract with us, then they can call us any time. But if a individual could never find their scores, so now they're getting a little bit more loose with individuals. How can you improve on a score if you don't know what it is?
Exactly.
It's kind of like you need 100 points to get an A on your exam in college. And so you don't get an A, but the professor doesn't say, well, you can't, I'm not giving you any credit for the course. Well, what was my score? I can't tell you that. Well, I really need to know that so I know where I can improve. Okay, well, I will give you the score, but it'll cost you $7.95.
Right. Or $16 now.
Yeah.
Or depending on the package. Oh my gosh, yeah, it's not cheap.
No,
I think
it was a travesty for consumers to have to go through that. I mean, certainly, we're still seeing that, and I saw that in some numbers this week as we were talking about housing, and we're going through some housing data. The Census Bureau is releasing housing data this week, so we can kind of see what's going on. And you know, some of the numbers are familiar. One of those being that, you know, home ownership is about 64%, and it's always been 64% for as long as you can look back. We tried to force that. I shouldn't say we, but there were individuals that felt home ownership should be this wonderful thing, and it should be like 75% of the population own a home. Even though throughout history it's always been about 64%, they thought, well, 75 sounds like a better number. And so what we'll do is we'll lower all of the requirements to get a home mortgage. And, of course, you know what that caused, because we had that big blow up in the December of 2007. You know, they're releasing, you know, some of that data now, and we're beginning to take a look at it. What we are seeing, however, is that what it used to be about, I'm going to say 40% of the population spent, it depends upon what state you're in, but about 40% of the population spent 30%, up to 30% of their income, their take-home pay, on housing. It's now up to about 50% are paying 30% on housing. So it's costing them more to live in a home. Even though the people that got, I don't want to say washed out, but the people that through a lot of times no fault of their own and through the recession and everything else lost their jobs, lost their income, lost their homes, lost their possessions, are now repairing their scores, doing a lot of things to repair, and then returning to the home buyer market. So we're beginning to see an influx of people that once owned a home, had everything taken away, and are now recovering from that position and coming back. And we're talking, what, 8 years now into the recovery that that they're just starting to recover, which is one of the reasons that, you know, if you look at it from the economic standpoint, why isn't the interest rate being raised by the Fed? Because the economy hasn't fully recovered yet.
Right. Although it certainly sounds like this summer we're finally going to start seeing the first hike.
I think they're going to push it off. I really,
you
know, I think that they won't happen before Christmas. The numbers that I'm beginning to see and some of the statements that I see out of, and we'll know 3 weeks from now. They're meeting today and tomorrow in Washington, D.C., and 3 weeks from now they'll release the notes. But they'll have an inkle tomorrow afternoon as the chairman has her press conference. And everybody listens to the specific words that she will use when she talks about anything within the economy. And a lot of them are still very cautious. They see inflation is low. It's about 1.4%, so it's below their target of 2.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really see the economy is growing rapidly. They saw some spin back on the number of job openings and the number of new jobs, new hires.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they're going to be somewhat cautious. They're going to wait and see if the numbers jump back up to 2.25, 2.50
right.
In the first Friday of May, which is not this coming Friday. It will be the 8th that they'll release that data. They won't release it on the 1st. But they'll look at those numbers before they make their decision for June, July. I suspect they're going to push it off to Halloween, Thanksgiving, somewhere in there. Before they raise the rate. And then when they do, it's going to be so small, it'll be like, you know, piling one hair on top of another.
Right, right. Well, it'll be interesting timing-wise if they want to do something like that, and they do it heading into the big retail season of the year when people spend a lot. And like I said, it would be negligible for a first interest rate increase, but we'll be talking about it. Everybody's talking about it. Interest rates are on the rise.
Oh yeah.
Oh no. And they could fear a boomerang impact on the shopping season, which is a big driver in our economy as well. So
I heard it on the radio today. There was an individual that was talking about the mortgage rates, and the latest spiel is the mortgage rates could go higher. Well, duh. I mean, yeah, they could. They could go lower too. Right now they're on a downhill slide, but
do you know what rates are?
I don't know what it is this morning. It was about 3.3 something, 3.30, 3.36, somewhere around there. It's getting very, very, very close to being at the all-time low in November of 2012. But if we really look at it and look back to the history of rates, the highest it was ever at was 18.5% back in 1980, and since then it's been going downhill all that period of time just to keep home ownership up. The you know, even if it went up a tenth of a point, it is so low right now that it is still an attractive rate. I just hate these ads that scare people into, you know, you've got to do something
now
because it's going to go up.
Yeah.
You know.
So well, it's fascinating because. As I'm looking into the future, I think I've told you. You know what? I guess I've got a lot that I have not shared with you in the last 2.5 months. So I am both a homeowner and a renter right now.
Are you really?
At the same time, simultaneously. So, and I'm looking at probably additional. You're saying, what are you doing, Don? On the side, I'm becoming a slumlord owner. No, I'm in a. No, I'm. As other changes in my life have made us look at our housing situation, so I'm probably looking at another mortgage or so in the next 6 months. So of course, you don't want to be paying through the nose. I'm still at a 4% interest rate because I refied and rates fell below into the threes, and I got it was not enough for me to refi a second time. People often say, well, how often do you go? Well, you know, there's an easy financial formula for figuring out what your closing costs, you know, and origination fees of a new loan are versus what you'll save on a monthly basis and how long before you break even when you pay off those costs and you're starting to save money. Well, if you continue to refi, it pushes back that payoff point. So anyway, so I'm sitting here at 4 and I'm like, well, if it goes all the way back up to 4, oh, shucks, it's still... It's still relatively nothing. Now, if rates started to shoot up, I think my first house was at 7.5%. And I know you're saying, oh, you missed the 80s, didn't you? I said, yes, I did. But, yes, it's still relatively, you know, it's ridiculously cheap. Of course, it's ridiculously cheap because you've seen the entire cycle, Rick. So, as a matter of fact, what year did you buy your first home?
I bought my first home in 81.
So you were right there at the
high. I bought it at 18.5%. It was it was like buying a house on a credit card.
Oh, my God.
It really was.
Oh.
And,
by the way, as a HUD housing agency, we do not recommend you to.
But, you know, that was the going rate at the time, and everybody was saying, you know, you need to buy now before it goes to 20%. And so I bought at 18.5%. Then it started to slide. So about I'm going to say maybe 4 years into it, 5 years into it, I refinanced it at 9, and I thought, hey, this is a great.
It went from 18.5 to 9.
Oh, yeah. It was, you know,
wow.
And so I thought, this is a great deal.
Yeah.
You know, if it had slid all the way down to 3 and I still held out of the property like a fool at 18%, you know, refinancing from 18 to 3 would have been such a significant savings, it would have been ridiculous. But at the time, I could afford it. You know, at the time, certainly, you know, when I wrote out my mortgage check, everything got sucked into interest. Just, you know, it all went in there.
Right.
So it was pretty ugly at the time. Although I will say now, being a property owner, that I get from my financial institution about once a month, and they spend a lot of money doing this. Federal Express delivers an envelope to my door. With a 4-page document on the inside of it that says all I have to do is make a phone call to refinance my current mortgage. Well, I started reading through the particulars, and the big number on the front is the current interest rate as to what they'll refinance it, and there's not going to be any closing costs. They'll take care of all of the closing costs and everything else that has to be paid, you know, titles and everything. And they'll pay all that, and here's what my reduction would be in my my monthly mortgage. And I looked at that, and I thought, well, one, I already can afford the mortgage as it is right now. Two, I'm already paying extra dollars on it. Three, they want me to refinance it 10 to 15 years. I only got 5 years left. You know, I feel like what they're doing is sending me a letter thinking I'm stupid. I mean, to be really honest, they can save the $10 or $15 that it costs to have FedEx send me that thing and just apply that to the mortgage if they would like. But I get one once a month, and it's got a window on it that I have to act before the end of the month.
Yep.
I just got one at the beginning of this month. At the end of this month, that thing goes away. I know that May 1st, another one will show up on my door with a different interest rate. I finally called them and said, why are you sending these silly things? They said, well, really, the government, the regulators are making us do it because the regulators are pressuring us that we need to refinance as many mortgages as we possibly can to take care of the citizens because of all the bad things that happened during the recession. I'm going, well, okay, fine, but save the money. You know, don't send me this
exactly.
$15 package once a month.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Well, you know what? So my money management has changed, not just where I'm getting my income from, but it's been an interesting time as I took on a rental simultaneously, and getting a second set of utilities, which is very interesting. I've not rented in 18 years. That we were last in an apartment, and it was really funny because as I shopped around and I'm looking for an apartment, and by the way, you can always go to a HUD housing agency for rental counseling, just as you would pre-purchase. I know all the things to do for rental, but the applications are so different, and I finally found the place I was going to live at, and I love, you and I both live in Collin County, I've lived in the heart of Collin County for 7.5 years, right at Four Corners, where Frisco, Plano, Allen, and McKinney all meet. So I decided to move across the street to still live right at the intersection of Custer and 121 at Four Corners. So it's really funny. But anyway, so as I was talking to the property management, and they were doing the check, and they said, you got a much higher income than the average renter in our. And I said, well, thank you, I think. That's good. And then they said, and you live across the street, too? I said, yeah. I said, it's complicated. But anyway, it was actually interesting how easy the process was. And yet I know, talking to certain folks, they find that their credit or their income, you know, or their bill-paying history is a barrier, even to renting. And so it was nice going through that for myself so I had that experience and talking to others as they're looking for apartments and just shopping price-sensitively-wise. Some people think that that Dallas is an expensive place in general, the greater Dallas area, for renting, and I was like, wow. To me, I thought it was very affordable. And of course, there was probably much cheaper than I even found. But I was all about location, location, location. Mm-hmm. That's what they say for real estate, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be as absolutely close as possible to my former house,
mm-hmm.
Because there are a couple of there are a couple of reasons. Their names
mm-hmm.
are Katie and Josh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm 0.4 miles away from my Katie and my Josh,
mm-hmm.
and getting to see them every day,
mm-hmm.
Which it, to me was the most important thing. So kind of interesting. I'm getting used to having two sets of bills. I was like, all right, wait. The cable at one place is due on the 15th. The cable at the other place is due on the 1st. Wait a second.
Mm.
Let me think this up.
Mm.
And utilities. And I went through the exercise of renter's insurance,
mm-hmm.
Which I had not done in a while. And it is so cheap. They said, how would you like to do the bill this weekly or monthly? I said, how about I pay the full year in advance? Because it's one less thing I'll have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was interesting in itself.
Mm-hmm.
I also got a storage unit, and you know where I got my storage unit was also at the. It was on the Plano side. It was in your district,
ah,
there, Rick.
Ah. We're getting some tax dollars.
I know. Bring in some business, and I realized, wow. So now I own in three of the four corners. And, of course, most of my money goes...
You know, if you get the other fourth corner, you have a monopoly.
Oh, there you go. Actually, well, most of my... Well,
put a little house on each one of them.
Prior to all this, most of my money went to the fourth corner because that's the Target shopping center where we do all of our shopping and stuff. So everything else went there. But, no, so that's been fun and honestly interesting. And I enjoy... Not that I necessarily enjoy the process,
mm-hmm.
but... It's fun to be uber focused on your money and where every bill is going, every dollar is going, and trying to make that count. And so I know that's a sadistic thing for most people to say, really? You like the bills? Actually, I don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds you what's important because we should always have goals for our money, and you want to know where every single penny is going. So I'm probably more familiar with where my money is going now than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talked in January about financial resolutions, I probably didn't know exactly what my year was going to look like. I certainly didn't expect a job change,
mm-hmm.
but I knew I'd have to be more focused on where my money is going, and I'm actually doing it. It's kind of neat, four
mm-hmm.
months in.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 months in, gee, Rick, if we say it's the one-third checkpoint,
mm-hmm.
try to remember what your financial goals were. Was it socking a little bit more into your retirement?
It was reducing my mortgage down so that it didn't have 7 years; it had 5 years left,
uh-huh.
and I am accomplishing that.
Are you on par?
Like you wouldn't believe. Yeah.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, it's reducing down so quickly that I must have in the process done something or caught somebody's eyes because I am getting not only in my mailbox that gets stuffed every day with offers for credit cards, but now it's vacation trips.
Wow.
On ships and, you know, to the
uh-huh.
Himalayas, and it's just crazy land USA in my mailbox now. It's all this stuff that I just, you know, take a look at it and go, oh, okay, another credit card offer. That one goes through the shredder.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because I don't throw that in the waste paper basket.
Never,
you know,
never.
There's these divers that use those things
mm-hmm.
for whatever purpose.
And remember what Rick just said. If you have a pre-approved credit card offer, if you just drop that in the trash, somebody else could
somebody
open
else
it up.
Pre-approve it for you.
And they will sign it up and they'll say, by the way, my name is Rick Grady, but my address is not Plano, Texas. My address is actually Boise, Idaho. So
yeah.
Make sure my bills go there.
Post office box 1462.
Yes. And by the way, I'd like a higher credit limit than you've offered.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll gladly do that to you,
mm-hmm.
Rick.
Yeah.
And then Rick's got a new credit card that
mm-hmm.
he has no knowledge of because the bills aren't coming to his home.
Mm-hmm.
So so there you go. That's why you shred your pre-approved.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been interesting the time for me money-wise. I must say, I'm a much happier person with income coming in than I was not.
I can totally understand that.
So I also have, as we'll segue, we really will segue into Workers' Memorial Day. Because I'm still giving a memorial for my former job. But
Actually,
last week I got to meet with all of my team
mm-hmm.
back at my former nonprofit organization
mm-hmm.
because I was coming up on the 60-day notice of I had to make a choice on Cobra.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cobra, it's not just for G.I. Joe anymore. So,
No. And it's not for your wallet half the time, too, when you take a look at that premium.
It was not for my wallet. And you realize how much your employer, or in this case former employer, subsidized your health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, you're now paying full rack. Here's what you would have been paying off the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really tough, Rick. So when I got my job, they said, well, there's a 90-day wait period until the benefits kick in.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have many things in common. And there's one thing that you and I share in common that we both wish desperately that we did not share in common.
Yes.
And it's something that really necessitates not having a lapse in coverage, you know.
And certainly one that doesn't say pre-existing conditions.
Yes, you know. Yes. So now I know my employer, there's no pre-existing conditions. I'm going to get health insurance regardless.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, maybe it's the stress of everything going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, in addition to going through a job loss,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a divorce simultaneously,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to have the third of the big three. And
yeah.
Oh boy, I'm waiting. DJ Rick is pulling up an appropriate song.
I was just getting syncing it up for the end of, you know, whenever the end of the show comes here, to make sure that I had it synced, because otherwise I'd press the button and there wouldn't be anything there.
Oh, I thought you were going to pull up Papa's Like a Rolling Stone, or, you know, or your favorite Rolling Stone song, So just as I've teased people, I should have some horrible medical thing befall me, and then.
Mm-mm-mm.
I started having the pains.
No.
So exactly. So anyway, on the 60th day, again, you've got 60 days to make your election.
Mm-hmm.
I had the choice of, by the way, never ever in a million years would I ever encourage people to even consider going uninsured.
Mm-hmm.
But I was looking here saying, I made no claims for 60 days. Do I want to go back now and pay HireAct health insurance for the last 2 months?
Mm-hmm.
For when I've not had any claims. More importantly, do I think I could surf until my new insurance kicks in? And then it's like, not only is there the financial equation of a gamble there, but there are the penalties now that you'll pay for going uninsured, you know, and what that would come out of my tax return bill next April. And I thought, the fines may be such, it would just be stupid. I need to finally elect that. So. So I did. So now my body will feel free and clear to put me through any turmoil it does, and I'll be able to have the full enjoyment of the crappy insurance that I've had for the last 7.5 years, and it would be crappy for anything to happen. So I'll still hope that nothing occurs, but I'll just be paying the premium for nothing to occur.
But the nice thing about it is that if something does occur, at least it's covered, and I will tell you that that was an eye-opening experience for my daughter when I was going to have an outpatient surgery to remove this, what I would call boulder that got stuck.
A boulder.
And
wow.
You talk about, and people that have never experienced kidney stones don't really relate to a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
That these are tiny little fragment crystals. That, you know, if you looked at a ruler or a millimeter ruler or a meter ruler, you would see that a 2 millimeter is really, you know, looks really small. But
granular.
Yeah, but it feels like a truck is going through you. And so this one was 6, and the doctor, or the urologist, basically said, look, you know, there's some flexibility to this tube, but you're beyond the flexibility, and it got jammed.
You can't put 3 semis through a 2-lane tunnel, huh?
No. This is like shoving a bowling ball through a straw.
Wow.
And expecting the straw to survive.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was going to do surgery. You go in, and the first person that you meet in outpatient surgery is not the nurse or the doctor or anybody else. You meet the financial manager at the hospital who sits down with you in the bill and the insurance company that they've pre-approved stuff and tells you how much money you're going to owe versus how much money this whole thing is going to cost and the insurance company is going to pick up. Well, I showed the bill to my daughter because when I looked at it, I thought, this is, you know, it's going to take them about an hour and a half. It did take them about an hour and a half to do this piece of surgery. And that piece of surgery for an hour and a half cost $26,000
26 was the total cost, or not your, that was not me,
yeah. but still, it was about $3,000 out of my pocket.
Yeah.
But it was $26,000 for all of these people that are standing around in this surgical ward, doing all of this very complicated stuff with all, you know, fancy microcomputer controlled equipment to get into a very small space. And I told her, this is why you need to have health insurance, because if you have something like this, and it was $26,000, and I now owe $26,000, I could do one of two things. I can die, or I can go broke.
Yes.
Those are not two choices that I want.
No, no. So, I had to go back to work to elect the Cobra so that I don't have those issues. And it was really, it was really nice to you realize how much and by the way, you're part of my work family. You've been, and that's why it's so meaningful to be back here. I got to see some of my former team members. I know one of my team members who's been on the air with us a lot in my stead, and hopefully it'll continue, and Jenny Stewart. So, and it was nice getting to say goodbye to some people that I didn't necessarily get a chance to do, and you realize how much your identity is tied with where you work.
Yeah.
And, and so that was one of the best feelings. It really was. Really, really good. And it makes it easier. Sometimes when you go through a job change that's not necessarily by your choice, there's a lot of anger and resentment. And for me, my first and foremost was just covering my bills and making sure, you know, I've got little kids that depend on me. But then you realize, you know, I also have something else to mourn. I've got relationships with people that I'll keep as friends, but it won't ever be quite the same as going to battle with them, you know, or you're late at night working on a big project, or you're working a weekend through. So so it was really good. And I thought about memorializing my job. It was wonderful seeing them. As a matter of fact, as soon as we're done on the air, I'm going to go meet with one of my collaborators for Money Week Dallas, which, because of my change in job, I wasn't able to really fulfill my role as chair, because I had the chair pulled out from under me. that was a good one.
That'll do it.
Yep. So excited though to hear about how it's Financial Capability Month always in April, and so it was Money Week here for Dallas Fort Worth, and kind of hearing about the impacts and what we were able to accomplish with our credit union partners and financial institutions and nonprofits across the great Metroplex, and looking toward the next year. So so I feel like I'm becoming whole again.
Good.
You know?
Good.
So that's nice. So before we do Worker Memorial, are there any other big headlines that I have missed here the last 2.5?
You know, I can't think of any, at least at the present time. We'll have a big headline, hopefully, on the 9th of May, but that'll be the 9th of May when we can make a big headline. 10, 11, probably the 12th of May, we'll let everybody know what the election results were in Collin County and what the election results are in Plano. So,
yay! Yeah. That is very exciting. How was that process? Was that exciting for you?
I think it certainly is a very interesting process from the standpoint that there are lots of forms as a candidate that you have to go to, and of course the forms aren't being held now because the election process is going on. Nobody wants to hold forms during the election. They want to get it prior to the beginning of elections. But the thing that I liked about the forums is that there's lots of questions that people have, and they may not all be directed towards me, but I wrote down all of the questions that people had in any audience at any forum that I attended to any one of the candidates that were running, from the standpoint that I wanted to know what was on their mind and what they were feeling about as far as the city is concerned. As I was talking with some Boy Scouts last night, talking to them, helping them get their citizenship badge, I think it's a citizen badge, I can't remember exactly how they termed it, but the one of the things that they have to talk to is an official of some sort. And so I went to talk to them, and what I did talk to them was the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the last 17 amendments. And I covered that in 15 minutes, so, you know, it wasn't, it was kind of high-level stuff, but what I told them was that...
You gave them the Schoolhouse Rock version?
I did. It was. I mean, I basically told them, you know, look... we were not being represented very well, and a party took place in Boston, and they waited for a merchant ship to come in, and they threw all the supplies, basically tea, into the bay, and because they weren't going to pay the tax on it, because they weren't getting any representation, and that's what the United States government in every genre of it, from the local government being the city to the state to the federal government. Is a representative form of government, and that is you elect an official to go to represent the citizens, and where I have always struggled in the past with some representatives is they get elected, but they go and they play out their ideas. Well, their ideas may not be a representative of what their citizens are really asking for, so... That's why I took a lot of notes, was because I want to represent the people that are in the city, wherever they may be, and what their feelings are, one way or the other, and then that should help the city council make very good decisions as to what is going to happen in different locations because of what the citizens have to say.
Mm-hmm.
The struggle that I have, as I mentioned, was representatives that either go to the state level or to the federal level. And immediately take on the character that they know what the citizens want, and they may not know what the citizens want. So they may be representing the entire state, but as you look at them on the news, you go, well, I don't feel like that. Well, that's because they're not listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that to happen. So that's what was refreshing about the forums, is you get a real good feeling, a cross-section of what people are feeling. So...
Mm-hmm.
If you went to a forum of young Republicans or young Democrats, you got one perspective. And when you went to the forum held by the AARP, you had a completely different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And there were different concerns that they would have. You went to a forum that was put on by the PTA, you got a different perspective than if you went to a forum that was put on by a Rotary Club.
Mm-hmm.
So there were different questions coming up as to what their feelings were that the city needs to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was so excited, and I know it started just before I was going through some of my life changes, but gosh, a few years ago we saw Susan Fletcher running for office, but it was not the Susan Fletcher that people know for Your Money, Your Matters. When I saw Rick Grady posters in my neighborhoods, I knew... That was you, and I was really excited and really so proud of you. There's nothing to me more important than public service and stepping up and helping lead the community you live in. So we are all so excited for you, and I know it's going to be a great opportunity as you move forward. And of course, you're probably not supposed to say anything. So I'll say, everybody get out there and make sure you're doing your part, and Rick will be off.
I can't ask them to go out and vote.
And whether
they want to vote for me or they want to vote for somebody else. When it is voting time, and this is what I told the scouts, I said, you need to understand that here was a Declaration of Independence, basically saying we don't want to be treated like this anymore. We are not subjects. We will not have all of our money taken away from us and then pittance sent back to us for whatever you didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
And the Declaration basically says a lot of that, that was the reason for the separation. But then you get into the Constitution, which sets up the government, but it wasn't perfect. That's why we had 27 amendments.
Yep.
And we had the first 10 amendments, which were considered the Bill of Rights of the individuals within the states, and then the other 17, which added on to that. But I said, all of this, you need to understand, took place during a time of war, because 1775, the Revolutionary War, started And we really didn't win our independence until 1814, when the British finally decided, okay, enough is enough, and we won't attack you anymore, and we won't burn down the Capitol and the White House anymore. And that was after the Bill of Rights was even signed into law. So all of these documentation took place, and a lot of people lost their lives over the right to representative government and to vote. And a lot of people have defended it. Since then, 1.5 million people have given up their lives in the military to defend the Constitution of the United States. I said that is the ultimate of what the Constitution stands for, because as a representative, president or a congressman or a council member, you stand up and you say that you will preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Which means that you will make sure that your laws are not in conflict with it. But if you're a member of the military and you're saying you're going to preserve and protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, it means with your life. And 1.5 million people have lost their life over that statement and proudly doing so. So when I look at it from a, you know, you talk about a workers' Memorial Day.
Yeah, perfect segue.
Yeah, you know, these are individuals that defended the Constitution to their hilt, so that the people that were sitting in the room, the scouts that were there, have the right when they're 18 years old to vote, and they don't have to. I mean, nobody's forcing anybody to vote, but a lot of people sacrificed everything they had. Including the people that signed the Declaration of Independence. And when they signed off on it, there's a statement right before their signatures that says that they realize they are giving up their freedom, their life, their possessions, and everything that they have, every worldly good that they have, including their life, by signing this document. And when they signed it, they became traitors to the crown. They could have been shot or hung if caught. And so, you know, they tried to keep a low profile after signing it, because the British immediately, well, at that time, were fighting and were looking for these individuals. So they were on the move. They were considered by the British government, to be really honest, they were considered to be terrorists. And so, you know, this was something that people fought for. And when people turn 18, you are given the right to vote. And if you want to be represented, vote.
And we'll be sharing with you the Your Money, Your Martyrs election party, the party location in the next couple of weeks.
So, well, it will be
crazy.
You know, so, I was talking. We were talking about Workers' Memorial Day, and I was reading some information on that. I came across another nonprofit organization which I think is wonderful, and people really should go to it for two reasons. First, it's called the Insurance Information Institute. I can't tell you how many insurance companies actually provide money to this organization so that this organization can provide information about types of insurance and what do they mean and what terms are and those types of things. So if you're confused with insurance, what is short-term disability? What is long-term disability? What kind of insurance should I have? What kind of insurance is only a luxury? You know, all those types of things. I would go to the Insurance Information Institute, which is iii.org, because it is nothing but a wealth of information on this site. The other reason that people should go to it is they have an app. And if you download the app, and I'm going to look at the picture because I just downloaded it. I haven't played with it yet, but I'm going to be playing with it very shortly. Let me see. I'll get to the picture here. And then musical time. I have it. Ah, here it is. They have three sections to the app. One of it is a planning piece. So
right.
It is planning your budget and helping you plan your budget, and within the budget, what kinds of things would you want insurance for? So you say, well, I have a car. Well, you need car insurance. You have a home. Well, you need home insurance. Another one is knowing the types of coverage that you have, and is this good coverage or not good coverage. And then the third one is a home inventory that works with the camera on your phone. You go around and you take pictures or videos of all of your rooms and all of your possessions, and it documents that so that you have a document of all of the things that you have. So it really helps with what you and I have talked about on this show quite a bit. It's an app for an iPhone or an Android. that helps you plan the types of coverage that you might want, whether that is homeowners insurance or auto insurance, health insurance, and some of the disability insurances. Because I found in some of the statistics that I was reading that every week 12 people die in the job. That sounds like a big number. It isn't, but still, 12 people a week die on the job, and typically it is caused by something that happens on the job. Now, what I thought was maybe the most dangerous things in the world really weren't the most dangerous things in the world, and that is a lot of times people die from a fall. So they could be a painter or a roofer or something of that nature. But in the construction industry, the construction industry is one of the most dangerous. So before the show, I looked out my window just to look at the rain, and thank God we got more rain in a drought-stricken area, and we may be getting over our drought. And it's raining, right? And it's wet all over the place. I look down in the construction that's taking place outside of our building that's been that way for the past, you know, 4 or 5 years. And here's a welder welding in the rain. Now, anybody that knows anything about welding knows that there is a significant amount of amps that are generated off of this welding gun so that he can fuse two pieces of metal together. And he's standing in the rain welding. And one of the things that it said is the highest cause of death on the job in construction is electrocution.
Ew.
So he's down there welding away, you know, with this very hot device that's creating a significant amount of amps so that metal will glow to a white hot and he can fuse them together.
Wow.
And I thought, he's pushing his luck.
Electrocution, that's shocking.
But then the thing that I thought was interesting is I thought, well, you know, what are the other places where you may need short-term disability? You didn't,
right.
Obviously you didn't die. But you have short-term or long-term disability, you're off the job. So I thought, well, what are the top five? I mean, is it all construction? What I found was, no, none of it's construction.
Really?
The incident rates are the highest in nursing home facilities, in nursing care facilities, where somebody may be lifting somebody and they lift them wrong and they sprain their back and all of a sudden they're on disability, short-term or long-term. And so I thought that was interesting. The second highest job industry is pet stores.
Really?
Where kids are, you know, and my daughter, when she was in high school, had a job in a pet store.
Uh-huh.
Well, I never thought about it, but, you know, some of these animals bite. And you get an injury. And so all of a sudden you get an injury, you get infected, you know, you're on disability.
Okay. Third.
The third department is police department, which I expected that to be the top.
Okay.
The fourth is the fire department.
Okay.
People that are firefighters.
These all make sense.
And the fifth one was vet clinics. And I thought, well, that goes along with pet shops.
Pet shops.
You know, somebody's helping, you know, in high school. And my daughter did this.
Mm-hmm.
They have a program in high school where they can go and work with a vet. And they can actually get an associate's degree in veterinarian medicine doing this program. And, the vet's trying to take care of an animal that doesn't feel very well, and the animal turns around and bites.
Wow. So now that's interesting, and I was gonna say, like food preparation or where you're cleaving and you know.
That's what I thought.
Using food processing machines. Something like that. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, and evidently, from what I could tell from looking at the statistics from OSHA, was that they manage those things very closely. They watch those things very closely, but you don't have an OSHA inspector sitting in a veterinary clinic. So they're not watching the animal that, you know, is having a bad day, and the vet's trying to give him a shot and asking the vet assistant to hold him down while the dog or cat decides to take a chomp on the arm.
That is interesting. Well, short and long-term disability, always important. Some employers cover that for you, others don't, and you always want to make sure you've got appropriate coverage, because what would happen, you're out of work for a month, 3 months, or whatever, and on top of it, you're probably incurring medical bills, and copays that are not covered by insurance, so that'd be a big double whammy.
Yeah.
So, So, well, that's very interesting. So, is there anything else we should memorialize for all of our workers on Memorial Day?
The other thing that I thought was interesting on here, days away from work or restricted work. The longest ones, and it sort of parallels, people that get hurt at nursing care facilities are out the longest. And my guess is it's because they're picking up a patient that has, you know, fallen out of a chair or something and spraining their back or pulling their back. Fire department, airlines, don't pack so much stuff in your bags. Airline, and typically it's the baggage handlers that have the issues because they're picking up really heavy stuff and trying to move it around, and they're doing it incorrectly. Electronics and appliance retail companies that you, where you rent, say, in a refrigerator, rent a washer and dryer, and as these people bring this stuff in, they do it incorrectly and they sprain their back. And skiing facilities. Now, that I can attest to because when I was on ski patrol, I saw a lot of people that worked at the ski hill that probably weren't as – they worked there to get up to be a better skier, but they weren't a good enough skier. And still they would do things that – even I was injured on the ski hill one time helping out a kid that fell below a, what we call a T-bar. And he fell below the T-bar, and I went over to get him out of where he was at the T-bar by pressing him down in the snow to keep him lower than the bar. I didn't keep myself lower than the bar, and the bar took a hit right on the forehead. And, you know, and all of a sudden I'm looking at the kid, you're bleeding, and the little kid's going, no, you are.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yikes.
So that, those things happen, but those are the ones that you're out of work the most, and I can understand that. You can break a leg in skiing real easy.
And I would have thought moving, would have, you know, movers would have been a big one, but especially because imagine it's one thing for baggage handlers where you're, you know, bags are different sizes, but generally it's going to be the same type of lugging that you do.
Mm-hmm.
But movers, every day you may have different challenges and different items that you don't know. It's like, oh, there's a piano, and we're going three stories. How do we do that versus, you know, a couch or a curio cabinet? And, you know.
But I find that some of the movers, and at least when I watched them, or they feel, to me, they appear that they were professionally trained, that a company said, this is how you move this stuff. The other thing I notice is they wear these belts. And the belts isn't really to support your back as much as it is to make it uncomfortable to bend over at the waist to pick something up, because that's the wrong way. The right way is to kneel down, then grab a hold of it, then stand back up, because your leg muscles are stronger than your back muscles.
Right.
And that's how you pick up a heavy object. I learned that when I was in high school in the construction business and would help, you know, dig ditches, and I was told, no, use your legs, not your back.
How about that? So, well, gee, Rick, this has been, I feel like I'm back home today.
Well, good.
It's so good to be back on Your Money, Your Matters, and partnering together. The crew is back together again. We'll have to get some of our other comrades from the foundation or Friends of Consumer Freedom and get them with us. But glad to be back. And wow, here's to our next 5 years of madness and mayhem on Your Money, Your Matters. You know?
Certainly glad that you came in, certainly happy that you're back. And happy that you all are with us again on a very fine Tuesday with Your Money, Your Matters, and certainly be with us again next Tuesday on Your Money, Your Matters. We started with Rockabilly, and we're going to end with Rockabilly. This is the Memphis Rockabilly.
Well, some guys are stout. Some gasoline.